is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. There are more Americans than ever who are single later in life. And that's why today, on this Valentine's Day, we decided to talk about dating while gray or grayish, ages 50 and beyond. It just so happens that this Sunday's Modern Love column in the New York Times covered the exact same topic. Writer Sophie Burnham agreed to read part of her essay for us. It's called, At What Age Is Love Enthralling? 82.
A younger man I know came knocking on the door. We sat on the deck behind my house to talk about what I expected would be the death of his father or the girlfriend he had broken up with recently. I'm accustomed to being a kind of mother figure, the wise older woman who provides empathy and advice. Instead, this man, 30 years younger than I, screwed up his courage to blurt out that he felt attracted to me. He left me shaken. I have no desire to take him up on his sweet confession, but he has made me stop and think about myself, about age, about life. Okay, I admit it. I suffer from ageism. I find myself buying into our cultural concept of age, which says I'm ugly now, a hag. What is it that attracts?
That's 82-year-old writer Sophie Burnham reading from her Modern Love column that was published in Sunday's New York Times. Let's listen some more.
Life brings unexpected changes, marriages end, and I have found that love later in life has been every bit as enthralling as when I was young. As we age, we can gain a comfort level with ourselves that lets us pursue whatever we wish without shame. Even my mother's reproving voice died down long ago, mostly, and I have felt myself free to choose whom I wanted or not and to act from my core. I like men. I like to look at men. I like their company. And just as I find a youthful girl's body lovely to look at, I find my eyes also tracking a fit male jogger on the street, shirtless, his body glistening. So what is it to be a woman at 82? What does femininity mean at this age, or beauty, sensuality? I should say that I have never been happier than in these later years, never more filled with wonder and delight. I think sometimes I am back to being a 9-year-old, only with a creakier body, filled with joy at being alive and with none of the damage that the raging rivers of hormones later inflict. So what do I want to tell women of tomorrow about the brilliant decades that lie ahead? I want to tell them about how good it can be. I want to tell them about joy.
That was Sophie Burnham reading her essay, At What Age Is Love Enthralling? 82. It was published in the Modern Love column in the Sunday New York Times. Today we're talking about what it means to be single and dating in the second half of your life. Joining me for this conversation today from our NPR studios in New York is Eric Kleinenberg. He's a sociology professor at New York University and author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. His most recent book is called Palaces for the People. Eric, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Also with us from KUOW in Seattle is Pepper Schwartz. She's a sexologist, a professor of sociology at the University of Washington, and author of Prime, Adventures and Advice on Sex, Love, and the Sensual Years, and also Dating After 50 for Dummies. Pepper, hi.
Hi. Great to be here.
Great to have you. With me here in the studio in Washington is Laura Stassi. She's host of the podcast Dating While Gray, which was produced as part of the Pod Shop at WAMU. Pepper, let me start with you. We mentioned at the outset of the show, more Americans than ever are single and in the second half of their lives. Just how big of a group are we talking about here on this Valentine's Day?
Well, in some ways it has yet to be seen because we're getting such extensions of the life course that you have enormous growth in people over 50, over 60, over 70, over 80, and over 90. So the end of what this incredible burst of response to better medicine, better health care is going to be is not as important as recognizing, I think, that people are looking at a very long life indeed.
Better medicine, better health care, longer lives for sure, but also lots of divorce, which means lots of people, 55, 58, who are single again.
That's very true, and particularly true for the baby boom generation. They actually have a higher divorce rate than people before them and seemingly after them. So there may be something special about this group, but the fact is, if you have a high divorce rate, you find yourself alone at 50 or 60, you don't just decide to be somebody's grandmother or grandfather. You say, I want love.
Laura, the pilot of your podcast, Dating While Gray, you were inspired to start that podcast because you felt like there wasn't enough information out there for the so-called gray daters. And I want to say, by the way, at the outset of this show, you might be 51 and not consider yourself gray. Don't tweet us about that.
Exactly.
I totally get it. You're not gray. Eventually, we all are.
Right.
This is the cutoff we chose. Some of you are grayish. Some of you are future grays. Some of you are truly gray. But this is where you decided to start.
Right. And based on my own story, I was married for almost 30 years before I got a gray divorce. And it's called gray divorce. The sociologists or researchers have named it that. So that's why I called it Dating While Gray. And yes, the divorce rate has gone up for this age group, 50 and older, but so has the remarriage rate. It's higher than other age groups. So I wanted to explore what it means to couple up at this stage of life. First of all, how are people finding partners? Because I had no idea how to date after not dating the last time I was single. No answering machines, no online dating. So I also, wanted to find out how to find a partner. But then once you do find a partner, what are some of the issues involved with recoupling?
So somebody said to you, I'm sure, when you thought about dating, oh, just get on Match, get on Tinder. You went, what? Or did you?
Well, so I have never been on Tinder.
Good.
Online dating. Online dating seems to be a great way for people to get a lot of dates. However, it's not necessarily the best way to find a long-term partner. So I have explored online dating, but I've also talked to a lot of people who are finding partners through friends of friends, finding them through matchmakers, just serendipitously meeting. So, there are plenty of ways.
Now, Eric Kleinenberg, for your book, Going Solo, you analyzed a different booming population of older Americans, many of whom, but not necessarily all of them, are single. One of the gray daters Laura interviewed for her podcast is in a relationship, but chooses to live alone. So listen.
I'm very involved in Washington, D.C. I sit on boards there. And Jerry's life is in Reston with his running buddies. When the day comes that one of us should not live alone, then we'll consider living together. I will. At 85 and going on 80, we still have a wonderful active sex life. We're not dead. We're just old.
Eric, this sounds familiar to me. I have a family member very close to me who was in a second marriage later in life, lived separately from her husband for 25 years, couldn't have been happier. In fact, it wouldn't have worked out any other way.
I bet we all have people in our lives who have had that experience, partly just because there's so many people who are living alone and enjoying being single throughout the life course. The really striking thing to me from the conversations I had with older single people and women in particular, the number of people who said, at this point in my life, I'd rather have someone to go out with than someone to come home to.
Hmm.
It's not that people don't want to be social or sexual, out there in the world. It's that people like to control their own domestic space and live the way that they want. And that's a massive change in the way that we have organized our lives. One of the things I observed is that because there are so many older people who are single now, it's possible to be single at that stage of life and experience very little stigma and also have a booming social life, right? So I think 50 years ago, it would have been very strange to go to a restaurant in the United States and see a group of women there together at night. Now it's completely conventional. That part of the culture has just transformed. And the other thing is that So many women I interviewed had had the experience of having taken care of a spouse who got sick and really struggled, and that responsibility was very hard for them to take care of. They didn't want it again.
Eric, hold the rest of that thought, because we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about why there are so many more retired age single women than men. We're going to get answers from our experts, your calls and tweets too. You're listening to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Rothy's. Rothy's is the everyday flat for life on the go that comes in four fashionable styles for women: the flat, the point, the loafer, and the sneaker. Fun designs and patterns while still looking polished and professional, with new colors launched every few weeks. Best of all, Rothy's are made from recycled plastic water bottles and completely machine washable, so you can feel good about wearing them. Go to Rothy's.com and enter code 1A to get your flats and free shipping.
Castlemont High is different from a lot of other high schools.
This student, he got shot four times.
I was just standing outside and, like, heck of bullets.
He held the gun up to my head.
I'm Sam Sanders. 1 year after Parkland, we talk to kids who face gun violence every single day. Listen on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson. We're exploring the dating scene on this Valentine's Day for people over 50 with sociologist Eric Kleinenberg, sexologist Pepper Schwartz, and the host of the podcast Dating While Gray here in her Valentine Red in the studio, Laura Stassi. Well, we have a couple of more stories of finding love later in life that you left in our inbox.
This is Dave from Gainesville, Florida. I found myself divorced in my mid-50s and kind of made a pact with myself never to remarry.
My name is Marceline. I'm calling from Salt Lake City, Utah. I was on a vacation by myself in my early 50s, feeling great, when I received a message from this boy, Sean, on Facebook that I hadn't seen since our 20s.
And I met a young lady, 10 years my junior. Fortunately, we're within walking distance from our homes, and we've been together for a little over 2 years. We have decided that we are not going to get married. Who knows what the future holds, whether we'll ever live together, but with our houses being so close, we have a good thing going.
We got together, we had a drink. I found out he'd had a crush on me for all those years, and we are now engaged and getting ready to be married, and we're very happy.
Well, men and women, studies find, date very differently, and that difference is amplified among older daters. We touched on it briefly. Let's listen to a clip from your podcast, Laura. You interviewed a psychotherapist named Marilyn.
You've probably heard the phrase, women mourn and men replace.
Oh, no, I haven't. Yes.
For the most part, a lot of women I know, and I would include myself in that, are looking for the man, and men are looking for a woman.
Pepper Schwartz in Seattle, these are generalizations from one person. Does the research back it up?
Not really. I think it's a lot more complex than that. I actually don't think men are looking for a woman. I think they do need a partner more than women need a partner, partly because men don't have that rich network of friends that women do. Mm. Women do have intimacy. Men rarely do once they lose a partner. So they're more driven, more motivated, and perhaps that means they have a wider scope. But they don't say, okay, I've got one. They think, I've got the one. And they may over-romanticize her because the need is greater, but I think that's the biggest difference.
What about the dating pool? It's changed so much. We mentioned the statistics, far more available women as you get older than there are available men. What does that do to people's incentives when they look at what they want out of dating, how motivated they are, and how motivated they might be to take dating to the next level of commitment and maybe permanent commitment?
Well, that is a demographic fact. Women take better care of themselves and they live longer, so they are a bigger pool of eligibles in the later ages. And I do think it changes motivation. I think there's the old joke about women that a good man is a man who can still drive at night. And for men, I think they have more women to pick from. But what I would say is that while people do complain about, women do complain about men not looking for commitment, which I think that's not true, but on the other hand, there's probably a bigger number of men who feel that they have many more choices and take advantage of that.
Now, Lisa in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has been holding on the line, was the first to call in, and I get the sense, very interested to chime in. Lisa, go ahead.
So I'm 57, and I was divorced at 37, so it's been 20 years. I live on my own. I had lived with my kids until they grew up and then moved out. I love living on my own. It's like the best way to go. And I can't really understand why everybody feels like I'm supposed to have some romantic relationship. I bought a dog, so that pretty much fulfills anything I need as far as, like, social time. Plus, I have a lot of love in my life. I'm not going to have kids, and I'm financially stable, so it just never really made sense to me once I got divorced and my kids were grown to even bother. No point to me.
Lisa, I'm glad you got a dog, and to each their own, and I'm happy that you're happy the way you are. I'm a little, I think you're saying that we men are useless, or are we only useless after 50?
Well, let's put it this way. If I need repairs done on my house, it's far cheaper to hire a handyman than deal with the emotional toll that you get out of a bad relationship, right? Second of all, what do I need them for? I mean, maybe you are useless after 50.
Gosh.
No. Maybe that's why most men after 50 want to date 20-year-olds.
All right, Lisa, let me ask Laura about this. You're cringing a little bit, but I want to get down to one thing that I got from Lisa. The older we get, the better we know ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right? When you're 22, like in anything, you don't have the experience to know what you want out of a relationship. 57 and divorced, yeah, men are useless is a bit of a shocker. Yeah. But here is someone who's in her mid to late 50s who knows what she wants from relationships. And that's a very useful thing when you're thinking about whom to date or whether to date at all.
I agree. And I think it's much better to be on your own than to be in a bad relationship any day of the week, no matter how old you are. So if she has decided that she does not want to pursue a romantic relationship, then that's fine. But I don't like generalizations. I don't think any of us should be emotionally dependent on finding somebody.
All right, let's go to Alan, who's been waiting on the line from Fort Myers, Florida. Alan, you're 65 years old. You've been married for 30 years now. What do you want to add?
Well, I was married for 30 years. I've been divorced for 2.5 years now. Hmm. And initially, before the divorce was final, I assumed that I would be seeking a long-term relationship with another woman right from the start. And I didn't wait until the divorce was final. I was listening to an NPR program on the dating app, and I had never even heard of Tinder or Bumble or anything like that. So I signed up the next morning. And I was surprised how many mature women there are that are very actively seeking relationships on those sites. So I thought, wow, this is going to be pretty easy. As soon as the divorce is final, I'm going to move right on. Well, between the literally thousands of women that matched on just the free sites alone, and then I retired the same month that my divorce was final, and I've been spending 9 months a year in Florida beach towns, and there are so many single people, so many over 50 single people still working or retired, that my attitude has completely changed as far as seeking out that long-term relationship with one person, because the loneliness never did kick in. Because I'm meeting literally dozens of single women per week because I'm living in different Florida beach towns and moving around, and there are way more women that are looking for relationships later in life.
All right.
Than men.
Great. Alan, let me stop you there because you said a couple of very interesting things that I want Pepper to respond to. Pepper, Alan's had a lot of luck in the dating pool. Numbers are on his side. Geography's on his side. I think his attitude is on his side as well at 65 and recently divorced. But Pepper, one thing jumped out to me. He mentioned using online dating apps, Bumble, Tinder, Match.com, you name it. There was a study released last year that found on dating apps, men's desirability peaks at 50, while women's is highest at 18. And in 2010, the dating site OkCupid reported that as men get older, they search for relatively younger women, while the upper acceptable age stays near their own. Now, data collection, these sites are revealing not only a lot about whom we look for, but who we're desirable to.
Well, First of all, there's a lot of ageism. We could do a whole program on that, but I'll just put it out there. And a lot of men, well, I would say I actually did the algorithm for a dating site that got bought and I think merged into Match.com called PerfectMatch.com. And we would find that a lot of people all believe that they are a good deal younger than they are. Everybody says, well, I'm whatever age they say. I don't care whatever it is, men and women, but I look so much younger, as if that's the best thing in the world. We admire youth even when we are not young, and so the reach down is, in a sense, confirmation of how young we really are. So there's a topic. But the fact is that the age pairs are unmatched in terms of what people's ideals are. But also people have to figure out what else do they own. Now, sometimes people in the past think that an older man is better off, and that's attractive. But of course, the economic demographic is changing. Women now are also becoming secure. A lot of, in fact, very secure women are very afraid to date because they assume that it's going to be the economic well-being that they have that's going to be attractive than anything else. I think a better study would be who does like their own age and who doesn't. Mm. And I think you might find some educational and other aspects to that that would mean that those people who like somebody more in the same age group they are different from the ones that don't.
Pepper, what about sex? Let's talk about sex for a moment. You could do a whole show on it as well, but let's do just a couple minutes and a little bit more time. There is a long history of a myth in American society that as you get gray, you're no longer interested in sex, you're not down, you're not sexy. We know that's not true. Are mores changing, though, as people get older and continue dating?
Yes, I think, remember the baby boom did, in fact, usher in a new way to think about sexuality outside of marriage. And I think as they've watched society change along their lifespan, yeah, they are thinking that, you know, I should continue to be sexual. I mean, they're in the gyms. Why wouldn't they be wanting to use those better bodies for something? And I think that the myth that they don't want sex or need sex or aspire to an intimate connection sexually is just that. Now, that said, those bodies don't do the tricks they always did, you know, when they were a lot younger. So for some people, they get blocked by the fact that they're not, you know, a sexual athlete anymore, particularly men. But I think a lot of people have used their communication skills to figure out how to have a good sex life as they age. And there's been a lot of medical changes that have changed that landscape. You know, it's been said that, you know, it's Viagra, et cetera. Actually, a lot fewer people use those drugs than you might think. But the fact is that they do have a market because people really do want to be sexually active.
We got this tweet from Richard in Orlando, actually an email, said, I'm a gay man who responds to young guys who are searching online for boyfriends who are over 50. I'm now 73, but in the last few years, I've had several dates with guys in their 20s and 30s. Dating while gray, but also gay? We're going to talk about the LGBTQ dating scene for those 50 plus. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from LegalZoom. If you want to make 2019 the year you finally start a business or secure your family's future, LegalZoom can help. With their network of independent attorneys licensed in all 50 states, LegalZoom can help you navigate your legal needs, from wills and trusts to LLCs, trademarks, contract reviews, and more. And the best part is, LegalZoom is not a law firm, so they don't charge by the hour. More at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. If you're a normal Wait, Wait listener, you shout out the answers to all the questions, and then you get frustrated that no one can tell how smart you are. Here's the solution, the Wait, Wait quiz, available now on your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker to open the Wait, Wait quiz. Finally, your genius shall be recognized.
Welcome back to 1A. On this Valentine's Day, it's Todd Zwillick, and we're talking about love in the second half of life. Here's a message that one of you left in our inbox.
I fell in love when I was 61. Actually, I fell in love when I was 59 and got married when I was 61. and it's been wonderful. We've referred to ourselves as teenagers, senior citizen teenagers.
We've been hearing from you over Twitter and email as well. Let's go to Judy, who's in St. Paul, Minnesota, with a nice story. Judy, you're 68 there in snowy St. Paul. What do you have to say on this Valentine's Day?
Well, actually, right now, I'm 77, but at 68, after two very contentious divorces when I was younger and a brief stint on Match, I thought, oh, no more of this. I'm just going to enjoy my life, do things I've always wanted to do. And I joined a senior rock and roll singing group that performs all over the Twin Cities, alive and kicking. And at one of our first gigs, I saw a man in the front row who looked so joyful and happy to be watching other people have fun that I went up to meet him afterwards. Long story short, we've been together since then, dancing, singing, acting. I think the most wonderful thing about dating when you're older, well, there's two things. One, you know who you want. You know what you don't want. You know what you'll stand for, what you won't. You accept people for who they are, and mostly that is in the reverse, too. And it's just a much better place to be. I've never been happier, never felt more loved, understood, and supportive, and we're having the time of our lives.
Well, it's
happy Valentine's Day, honey. I love you.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day to you, too, as well, Judy. It's a wonderful Valentine's story. But look, not everybody is interested. It's just as simple as that. That's totally okay. And we've been hearing from a lot of them as we plan this show. We've had a lot of listeners, Pepper, commenting that they're single and loving it. Mary wrote on the 1A Facebook page, at 65 with two bad marriages in the far distant past and single for 20 years, I am comfortable in my own skin. I don't feel a need for anyone to share my life. I'm whole. I'm myself. Chris wrote on Facebook, no thanks. Love being single. Nobody to answer to except the pets. I think he feels like Lisa in Pittsburgh.
club.
Right. So, Pepper, we don't want to have the attitude that you must have a life full of romance and love and sex that's great when you're 75 or 76. Some people don't choose it, and they get Valentine's Day cards, too.
Todd, let me just say this. I believe that we grow best with intimate relationships, that we can protect ourselves if, in fact, we've had terrible marriages, awful divorces, bruised and beaten by the kinds of experience we've had. We're naturally going to take, you know, a hand off of a hot plate because it hurts. I think sometimes people put together their defenses and they make a choice not to go through that again. They may not feel they pick well enough, etc. I think there are many good reasons to be single, and I see very successful single lives. But I'm a romantic person. I believe that life is lived well with certainly family and friends, but also a lover, somebody you really care about, someone who has your back, someone who understands you in a way that has a romantic or sexual aspect to it. It's not necessary for everyone. I wouldn't want to give up on it just because, you know, the experience has been bad. And I will say one more thing, because I really want to contradict the idea of just go along with your life. If I stayed in my house and waited for someone to knock on the door to offer me a job, I'm not going to get employed. I think you have to be active in search of someone if you really want them. And that means shaking up your life, because if your everyday life was bringing it to you, you would have had someone to be with. Are people happy alone? Yes. Do I think that having someone you love adds something to your life? I sure do.
Amen.
Eric Kleinenberg, some people are happy alone. Many, many people are not. But the simple fact is there are just way more people living alone now than there used to be. Age and demographics are part of it, but more younger people are living alone as well.
That's right. There's a whole new stage of life where young people who might have gotten married in another generation realize that the way to become an adult these days is to get a place of your own. And so there are all these young people now who are having 5, 10, 15 years of being single and developing a set of skills for staying socially active, for building relationships in the context of a very different kind of domestic arrangement. And I think this is going to change the way that younger generations age and experience relationships as well.
We got this tweet from Camilla. She said, "We live longer, outlive marriages, women have careers, own money after 50, no need for men. After 38 years with a husband, I got a girlfriend. We enjoy the same things, and the sex is far better." Pepper, let's talk about dating while grayer, over 50, in the LGBTQ community. We had one tweet from a listener before who said he gets interest from younger guys, maybe who are, I don't know, looking for an older guy to just play around with. That's what it sounded like.
You know, older men have a lot to offer. Amen. In both gay and heterosexual worlds. And so they're not trivial. I could name you a bunch I know. And as far as women, women's sexuality is, I think, much more flexible. And women fall in love with somebody who is a wonderful human being, and sometimes gender doesn't matter. So I think a lot of older women kind of open up their hearts, and if they meet somebody who's terrific, you know, that can sexualize the relationship, because often intimacy is the root for women, and that's what sparks the, you know, the sexual feelings in them. So, you know, we're a lot more fluid than perhaps we're comfortable with. We think of the world in terms of gay and straight, but the spectrum is a lot more complex than that.
Laura Stassi, go right ahead.
Yeah, talking about a fluidity and also how you reorganize your life, I heard a story, a beautiful story. Two men who had been married for a long time both realized they were gay and in love. They did not want to divorce their respective wives because they were business owners and wanted to make sure that their wives were well taken care of and could be still have health insurance. So they permanently separated with their wives, you know, knowledge, and everybody was happy about it. And the two men were together, but still legally married to their respective wives.
I think I've seen sitcoms with this through
line. Absolutely.
I think you just described a Lily Tomlin show.
Right.
But
look, no.
Here's another area where the cultural change is really powerful. And the fact that we live in a world where we are more tolerant and open and understanding, and different kinds of relationships and sexualities are less stigmatized, means that future generations will have more capacity to enter into meaningful relationships that work for them. And they won't have to worry about a lot of the things I think have limited us.
We got this tweet from Seaboom. "I'm 52 and happily and amicably divorced. I'm an avowed cougar and enjoying the freedom to date and explore without looking for anything specific. I'll know that when I find it. Till then, I'm confident in the power dynamic of dating younger men." And William sent us this tweet. "I married just over 3 years ago for the first time at 50, and I've never been happier. I've had always been very shy around women due to years of rejection, in part due to my own autism. Fortunately, I met my wife, who also has autism, on a cruise while celebrating my 50th birthday." Laura, what a nice
beautiful
Valentine's note.
Beautiful. And I actually got an email after I was on in December from a 63-year-old man, and saying that he was autistic and had never been able to find someone. And I think that is kind of an issue as we get older, our health, our and just having to navigate relationships.
I think we just need more cruises for single people, and that could probably take care of all of our problems. Let's all get out there.
That's maybe the best Valentine's Day advice for older folks. I don't know if anybody really likes cruises. You have to deal with the seasickness as well. There are lots and lots of ways to meet people if you choose that you want to. And that's another thing that we've established, that a lot of people want to meet. They want to mingle. Some know how, some don't. Some have had good luck, and not everybody does. But it has been a wonderful Valentine's Day conversation. I want to thank all of my guests for being here. Eric Kleinenberg, sociology professor at New York University, author of Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. Pepper Schwartz is a sexologist and professor of sociology at the University of Washington, also an expert on the TV show Married at First Sight. Pepper, thank you so much. And Laura Stassi, host of the podcast Dating While Gray, produced as part of the Pod Shop at WAMU, here in the studio in her Valentine's red. This show was produced by Avery Kleiman and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.